Hello, and a very warm welcome to On Design Extra. It's a show brought to you by the team behind Monocle's dedicated weekly design program. I'm Nick Manise, filling in for Nolan Giles. Recently, the polymath artist and designer Ez Devlin and her longtime collaborator Machiko Weston unveiled a digitally commissioned artwork to mark the anniversary of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki atomic bombings 75 years ago. Monocle's Louis Harnett O'Mara spoke with designers to find out more about the piece, titled I Saw the World End.
I've been working with Ez for the last 12 years, I would say. Through the course of working with Ez, something makes Ez special is she works on various different type of designing and art. So one week we are working for opera, the next week we'll be doing like a pop music concert, and the next week will be fashion, and the next week will be like art installation. She's brave and she doesn't hesitate to go over this border. I'm Japanese. I just now slowly realizing that my time lived in Japan is now close to the time I'm living in UK soon, half and half, almost. I'm kind of myself going that border.
Crossing the border. That's so interesting, Match. I didn't know that.
You've also designed the film in such a way that you've kind of split that half and half as well. So you've got the more Anglo-centric on one side, which is kind of quotes from Oppenheimer, you know, in relation to the nuclear bomb and the imagination of it. And you've also got, on the other side, the experience of it, which is from the Japanese side. If you could tell me a little bit more about that.
If you're Japanese, living in Japan, every year, no matter where you are, on 6th of August, 9th of August, and 15th of August, you will be reminded what happened now, 75 years ago. We have kind of talked a lot about how we can kind of present this and how we can go forward from this. And just talking about Japanese side, just talking about English side, I didn't feel that will make a justice or that will help us to kind of everyone to go forward from there. So we present two perspectives.
The lines of inquiry that we pursue in the studio tend to cross borders. So we might have one line of inquiry, we might explore it through the medium of an artwork and through the medium of a work of music and then through the medium of work of theatre. So the lines of inquiry tend to be quite continuous, even though the modes of expression shift. I think ultimately what we learned from Robert J. Lifton, who's one of the psychiatrists who's quoted, who's done an awful lot of work with the Hibakusha survivors, is he really underlines the preciousness of their testimony, because they won't be alive for much longer. And there's something particular that you learn from someone who says, no, I was there, and this is what happened. So it was important to us to keep presenting the moment. We're working at two different timescales in the work. Underneath the Line is pretty much all about two moments in time, 8:15 a.m. on the 6th of August and 11:02 a.m. on the 9th of August. Above the Line actually doesn't deal with the act so much, but with the act of imagination that spawned it and the acts of imagination that have followed it.
I suppose this would be characterized as a type of memorial for what's happened, and a type of looking back and remembering, and that's kind of central to the work you produced here. But how does one memorialise through design? You've done that through a kind of rift in the screen. Is that a fair characterisation?
That's correct, and we have a sort of now a term for this sort of genre, which we're calling collective reading. And it originated because in 2017 we looked at each other in the studio and said, actually, we used to read a lot more. We used to read and we used to not be interrupted to look at our telephones. And we observed that the only time we were really doing that intense, uninterrupted reading was when we were in rehearsal or watching an opera, because we would read the subtitles and our phones would be off. And we said, well, what if we just did the opera without the opera, but just with the subtitles? That was really a design piece that led to a quality of work. And yes, the idea with this is that people are gathered to read together.
This is an installation. It was meant to take place on a much larger scale in Piccadilly Circus, but instead it's here in the War Museum. And context has always been very important for your work. Why did you choose the War Museum? And tell me a little bit about the space around us now?
We have necessarily, over the last 5 months, been making digital work. We have spent 20 years making work in place that we now can't do. But what's really vital to us is that the digital work always has a sense of place and always leads people not just into a screen, but out of the screen to a physical place. We think it's important that you're always drawn from the digital back to the planet, back to Earth, basically. So you're absolutely right. And Piccadilly Circus, I think, would have been and will be, when we do present it there, an incredibly powerful place to locate this work geographically. Equally, we are sitting in a building now, just around the corner from where we're sitting is one of the five casings of the little boy bomb that landed on Hiroshima exactly 75 years ago today. So there's an incredible weight to presenting the work in a very modest scale in this building today.
How do you balance this kind of awful tragedy with also recognition and remembrance and an ability to move on?
I think to come back to what Machiko said earlier, our point of entry into this work was perspective. We had made a work called Memory Palace, which was about a sort of offering of hope to our audience to say, we believe that human beings can shift their perspective. We think it's possible. Let's look at the 73 times over the last 73 millennia where humans have made a leap. We thought the Earth was flat. Now we know it's not. We could shift our perspective again. We could be educated by these survivors' testimonies. We could make a shift. And why don't we? That's really the invitation. It's not just a memorial. It's an invitation to perspective shift through the lens of 2020, looking back at this moment. It's a very specific lens. It could lead to perspective shift. You never know.
And talking about perspective shift, we're aware of the context, as you say, also the scale. You've brought it from being a much, much larger display to being much smaller and, as you say, more modest. Can you tell me about why scale has been valuable to this project?
We work in scale a lot. Machiko has spent 12 years in my studio making 1 to 50 versions. She's an expert maker of models and sculptures. If you look at that little boy bomb, it's called Little Boy, it's no wider than 6 foot. The impact of it has left its indentation on the crust of the Earth. It's one of the identifiers of the Anthropocene, the influence of humans on the crust of the planet. It's embedded in our geology, it is embedded in our culture, and yet it's only 6 foot wide. Drawing our attention to scale is certainly not irrelevant today.
And do you see that as a type of memorialization to emphasize changes in scale? Is that important?
Scale is a fascinating thing because it helps humans understand. I can see the whole of that bomb within my two eyes. I can't see the whole of the devastation that it's caused, but I can see the root of it. I think it helps us, certainly the way we use scale in the studio, we understand the full scale, the full size of something because we built a small model of it and we can see it all within one glance. We as a species find it helpful to view things at scale.
Ez Devlin and Machiko Weston there, speaking with Monocle's Louis Harnett O'Mara. The digital artwork can be experienced on the Imperial War Museum website. And that's all for this week. If you're eager for more design stories, listen to our full-length program airing on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. London time. I'm Nick Manise. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.